the meeting open. This is an extraordinary council meeting. Here's our agenda. First of all, though, I want to welcome Diane Railton, who's going to be doing the minutes because Liz is in Texas.
Oh,
lucky for some.
She's there for Thanksgiving.
Yes, she is, actually. Yeah. Well, she can't be in Colorado because it's snowing up there. Okay, people, this is, we'll just quickly go through the things. We have no apologies, as I look around here, no leave of absence. There are thousands of staff in attendance, and I think there are members of the public here, the consultants at Alia, and the press. The agenda is quite straightforward. It is one issue that we're dealing with. Conflict of interest. Just want to talk to you about conflict of interest just very briefly. I picked up this the other day from the Auditor General, and I think that we need to have probably a session with the Auditor General, because all the work that we're dealing with over the next 3 years is going to involve quite a lot of conflict of interest of people around this table. I just want to say something very briefly to you. There is conflict of interest, which is obviously the simple one, which is about money. You know, I'm going to make money out of this. This affects my income. But there is conflict of interest, which is perception. There was an issue that happened while I was in Cabinet. I won't go into the details of it, but I got up and left. My skin was not going to be affected either way, but the perception of people of Christchurch would be that I had taken one side or the other in a rather bitter fight that really affected Christchurch for about 10 years. I couldn't afford that. It was wrong. I got up and left. It caused a lot of confusion amongst my Cabinet colleagues. And I just, over the weekend, I was checking with David Mayhew. Some of you may know him. Really damn good lawyer. I just checked that through with him at the time. So I'm just saying that to you, but today you're going to declare a conflict of interest, aren't you, Gary?
Yep.
Yeah. And two are? Okay. What I would ask of you is that you're at the table and debate and share us your opinions, okay, and experience.
Apologies, I understand that we can ask questions, but yeah, not debate. And well, yeah,
yeah, okay.
Sorry.
So debate is me using it in a very broad sense.
We can't talk to the motion, I understand.
No. But and then you'll pull away when it comes to the vote.
That was my understanding, or my intention was to be at the table to answer questions if that was of assistance.
Yep.
And then to step back from the voting. And note too that this topic hasn't been workshopped with councillors.
Absolutely. So understand that.
Thank you.
Which is why we've got 3 hours on this particular topic. I don't think there's anybody has registered with me or with you, Diane, or with you, Amanda, that they want to make a public interest thing, right? There are no minutes to confirm because it's an extraordinary meeting and there are no actions, and so now we're up to matters for the consideration, which is a response to Section 24A RMA investigation report. This is how I'd like to handle it. Who was it from the... Someone from the staff, and I've just lost you.
Peter Constantine.
Peter. Peter's going to take us through very briefly... for about 20 minutes. Don't really want to have too many questions then, because I want to then go back and go through section by section. Because in some of the discussions I've had or listened to people in the last wee while, I found that they are conflating a whole number of issues into this issue, which is making me, I go wobbly as I try and deal with it all. So I want to go through each of those. The background, response to the minister's recommendations, policy considerations, then considerations of finance. By that stage, legislative and risk, by that stage we should be at 10:15, morning tea, break. Then Professor Skelton joins us. He's flying down to us. We listen to him, we question him, we ask him lots of questions, and then we actually take the votes at the end of that. Is that, dear people, a satisfactory way of going through it? This is a complex issue. And it's the first of thousands that are going to hit us on this particular issue. So, Peter and Gwyneth and Anita. It's all yours. I'm sorry, dear, I keep on forgetting your name.
That's all right.
That's part of the course.
So does everyone know our names? Shall we do a quick introduction or not?
Go for it.
Peter Constein, Anita Dorr, who's the Acting Manager of Policy, and I think you all know me, Gwyneth, GM of Strategy, Policy and Science. Peter's a consultant and working as part of our policy team. Take it away, Peter.
So, good morning. What we've done here is actually try and summarise what's in the paper that came out last Thursday, Friday. I'm not going to say it's entirely summarised, but the key points that I think need to be shared are here. And the first slide has been deliberately chosen. It's a planning framework for Otago. That's what this is all about, and that's what the minister has been saying in the report, and what Peter Skelton has said in his report that sits behind it. So we're not here talking just about a water plan or just about Dean Perlman.
Making assumptions or making scientific facts or scientific assumptions that our science is not right. So, and we don't seem to be engaging with those people, so I just wonder at what stage before we do all this do we actually bring...
Is a report from NIWA in the papers?
I'm not saying from NIWA, I'm saying from local consultants within Otago, the Otago people that will argue against our science. So it would seem very, very good for us to actually engage with them and compare sciences to see if we've got common ground. And is that about to happen?
Well, I think we are already engaging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
The second part of the question would be, if we go back to, and again I'm thinking of my community, if we go back to...
The people of Oamaru or the farmers?
I'm thinking of Otago, which I have to do. Give me a tick for the correct answer there. if I... Who is going within the community? Who is going to bank? And I don't mean as bankers, but who is going to? Yeah, who is going to bank a 5-year? Who is going to bank a 5-year consent?
I gave to the farmers and the Manuhirikia, which is that we have work coming up in the National Water and Land, whatever it is, NWLA or R. That is June 2023. If I were a banker and knew that you had issues around water quality and that you had to meet, as well as water allocation, I wouldn't be lending you any money until that was resolved.
Correct.
This is all part of a package. It's not just dealing at it piecemeal.
So that's why
there's a 5-year limit.
Yeah. So thirdly, then, is it possible for us to go ahead under our current plans and issue consents to either deemed permit holders or people that are looking to renew consents to give them a consent that will allow them to continue, allow them the privilege of continuing to extract water subject to conditions that condition will be that we review their consent once we know, and it is confirmed, the National Policy Statement on Freshwater, once we have completed our Regional Policy Statement, and once we have set our Otago Water Plan.
You can defer that to the consents, guys, is that right?
Can I answer that so I don't put Joe in an awkward spot? Most consents have a review clause. So you can issue a consent and then review it. You can't review it with the view to reducing the amount of water because that's unlawful because it frustrates the consent.
Right.
So you would have to. You can only review it around uncertainty of conditions, and reducing the amount of water is not a lawful reason to review a consent.
Michael,
that's really important point because there's a lot of confusion over this. So can we just clarify this now? Any consent that you grant, let's just say there's climate change, something spectacular happens, we're in a drought for 5 years or whatever. And we need to pull those consents back in for water allocations that we've actually currently provided. To say, this is what's happening, we need to pull this back. We can pull the review in then, Yes or no?
You can't change the volume that that consent has sitting on it.
So, in other words, it doesn't matter what happens, no matter what national policy statements may happen in the future either.
Yep.
If we've said you can take 10 widgets of water for that month or that year, you're entitled to take 10 widgets of water, even if 10 widgets of water is not flowing past you.
Correct.
That's
correct.
Irresponsible. Yeah.
Well,
there's two people getting excited over there.
Sorry, just a small point of clarification. What we could review is any residual minimum flow, which would affect the timing of the take, but it wouldn't affect the overall volume that people were allowed to take. So you could still take your 10 widgets. But
just couldn't take it in January, February, March.
Yeah, it would just affect the time you could take it, depending on the level.
Right, so we can change that minimum flow. So just let's say we impose minimum flows on the Manuhirakea, for example. Take it right up to something like, you know.
Go on.
Whatever.
Stop stirring.
You say you do that, then you can pull all those consents in and go, here's the new condition.
Yes, yes. Yep. Yes, you can. There's provision to do that under the Act, but the review clauses, and I won't go into it, there are some risks associated with that for council and the applicant that we would need to be aware of at the time of doing it.
Okay. That's important to clarify. Thank
Kate,
you.
And then Kevin. Kevin Cater, been waiting for ages.
Just a point there. I'd asked a question. Just a point. I'd asked a question. I was going through my question. Council laws was allowed to jump in, and now we're going to another one. So I just want that noted, and I will I'll pass. But
Kate,
just,
would you want to?
It's quite critical.
I'll defer to.
No,
you
know,
Kate's
carry,
deferring
Kate,
to you.
I've,
Kevin, go on.
Yeah.
Kevin.
No,
one of the biggest things about this, so you're saying that one of the biggest things we were told in the reports is that we didn't have a failure to underpin with our allocation limits and everything, failing to underpin them with the appropriate hydrological monitoring and freshwater science. Well, that's one of the things that we've had. So if we go to the extent and do what I'm suggesting, that go out and allocate, go back and issue our permit subject to the MPS, subject to our plans and subject to the water plan, we have got the mechanism there that if we then put in the water allocation, yes, we can't stop the volume, but we can stop through minimum flows and... Can't we? That's what I'm saying. Why put all this pressure on everyone? Why not go ahead and issue stuff with the proviso that will be reviewed when these figures come down, so people can actually carry on with their life?
I think the simple answer to that is that any such condition would be ultra vires because of its uncertainty. You wouldn't know when or what would trigger the change, so the consent condition is actually meaningless. Consent conditions have to be enforceable, they have to be certain, and it has to be for a resource management purpose. None of those tests would be passed by a condition that said, oh, by the way, if A happened or if B happened or if C happened, we would call in your consent and we might do something with it. The other point I was going to make is Canterbury did this once and it cost them millions. It's not a good path to put yourself down. You don't want to be reviewing consents like that if you can avoid it. You want to get the planning framework right so when you issue them, they're in line with the outcomes you're trying to achieve. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Last question before break, Kate.
I'm going to put two in one then. I had expected that there would be an options paper here that would look at... potential ways of meeting the requirements, and one would may have been just rolling over the deemed permits to RMA consents with the actual allowance, actual use, sorry, on there, and just understanding why that as an incentive, and Michael talked about incentivising, we want people to come on board as easily as possible to get to that point. Why is that option not given here?
Because that's preempting a decision that this council has to make as to what it's going to do with the minister's recommendations.
Well,
and I wasn't prepared to go there, and I don't think...
No.
So that's what the purpose... The recommendation of the paper is asking us to give us permission to go ahead and do a plan change.
Yeah.
I think that's why we've provided the principles, because once you give us the direction on the principles,
we can go
then we can understand how we might make a plan change fit together.
But then why is 14 in there on principle 13? I can understand principle in 13, I cannot understand 14, because that is exactly what will get people upset. And the fact that it's actually in the report, it should have been an option under 13, not being one of the terms of 13.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that stage, and let's break. And then when we come back in at, I've forgotten the time, when we come back in at 10:30, we'll welcome you, Professor Skilton. Thank you very much.
I just said it. I'll change content out.
Anyone want a coffee?
Yeah, no, I need a
gym. Sorry, I looked for
anybody. How did you know what the news is good at? What is it that you want to do with the news is talking to? Understand that no one wants to sit with stranded infrastructure, which makes 5 years too long. So if you know where you're going, you'll be able to find the infrastructure that's good for it, because it will never be turned down if it's right.
It's not even commercial.
God, who's going to give in first at the time? Whatever, because it's actually a kind of
Thank you.
We're talking about a planning framework which will carry the region forward for the next 10 years before it needs to be reviewed. So, very briefly by way of background, I thought it would be quite a good idea just to set out what plans the council currently has. And this is them. I've also put the dates that they were made operative. Now, plans are supposed to be reviewed every 10 years. So some of these are a little overdue for review. I think part of that has been a result of the fact that there have been multiple plan changes to some of these plans, and plan changes are often seen as a method of review. It's not a statutory method of review, though. Unfortunately, you've got to draw a line in the sand and say, no, we are now reviewing the document. And that's where we fall a bit short with the water plan at the moment. The RPS is very close to being operative. That's the reviewed one. It's bound up in the High Court at the moment, and that will resolve itself. The reason the RPS is here is because the National Planning Standards, which came out in April this year, require that the regional policy statement be put into the new format by April 2022. For some councils, that's a straight cut and paste. For Otago, it's not quite that simple. And because it's not quite that simple, we have to go through the Schedule 1 process, which means we have to notify it, call for submissions, and go through that whole process again, hence the time frame that we've allowed. We won't talk about the rest, but that's the list of plans currently. So what's the problem? It's a good question, good place to start getting into this issue. Well, in general terms, the plans don't give effect to all the national instruments, and that's because this government has been pumping them out at such a phenomenal rate, it's been impossible to keep up to date.
It's been a delay.
And that's carrying on as well. And I know there's some concern around this table, there's some concern amongst the staff, and there is concern amongst our colleagues in other councils that we're never going to get ahead of this. And the ministry and the minister are aware of those issues. What that means they will do is an unanswerable question at this point in time. The plans also lack integration and direction, and by that, what we're saying is, and what I think Peter Skelton has said in his report, is that they're not vertically integrated particularly well. In other words, the regional policy statement doesn't drive the plan down from there. That doesn't drive consents particularly well. So we get into this situation where, in some instances, we're planning by consent. You issue a consent, that can have a massive impact on the way a part of a region actually shapes up for the future. And it's the direction that's missing, and by that, the objectives and the policies should very clearly drive environmental outcomes. They do, or they're written as though they do, but they don't get you home when you get challenged on them. Okay, and that's what I'm referring to there, and I'm pretty sure you'll hear from Peter later on that that's what he has seen in his review, and it's a comment that came from a number of people to him. And finally, in a general sense, the problem is they are overdue for review. So we need to get on with it. Dealing particularly with the water plan, because I know that's of most interest to most people, the water plan's problem is it doesn't contain the essential components for all catchments. In other words, there's not a flow and allocation regime for every catchment across the region. And that's a major, major problem. Many allocation regimes are merely the sum of the abstractions. And that's been recorded in the Lindis decision as a fatal flaw. You don't just add up the consents that have been issued and say, oh, well, that's the allocation, and we'll plan around that. Because many of these catchments are over-allocated when you add in the other things that are to be considered, such as the ecology of the environment. And I'm only using that as a for instance. So that's an issue that we've got with the plans. And finally, not all the provisions function. And Plan Change 6AA is the best example I can give you of that. We've just got an issue, in a nutshell, with Overseer and a version of Overseer that's referred to in the plan that doesn't exist any longer. You simply cannot get to that version of Overseer to do anything. And so Plan Change 6AA and the Omnibus are the quick fixes for that particular issue, but the issue is broader than that in today's environment, in today's statutory environment. So the problem is there. It's reasonably simple to talk about like that, but it's quite complex to resolve. So Peter Skelton did his review, sent it to Minister Parker. Minister Parker has made some recommendations to the council. These are the key points from his letter. So the planning framework is not fit for purpose. It requires a complete overhaul. That's a review. Let's not get bound up in the complete overhaul, woe is me situation. Let's just do a review of everything and bring it up to date. It's a legacy issue. It's not this council's problem. It's not the staff's problem. It's been around and growing for some time. So that's that dealt with now. Council's proposing to develop a work programme to achieve, or is going to develop a work programme to achieve, a fit-for-purpose framework. That's what the Minister wants to see, and that's what today's all about. The deemed permit expiry date remains 1 October 2021. The Minister, for his own reasons, has declined to pick up Peter Skelton's suggestion that the date be shifted out to 2025. I can't speak for the Minister. Peter may be able to give you more information of what's behind that when he gets here. And the Minister has also said there's an urgent need for a quick fix plan change to assist the deemed permit processing. Now, given those permits expire by statute, not just because they run out, they expire, everybody who holds one must come in for a new resource consent. So we've got to put a framework in place immediately so that those people can have their consents processed, or their applications processed, and that the council can process them in a proper way. And there's been all sorts of ideas floated about how that might happen, some of which probably have some legs, some of which probably have no legs, and we have to come up with something very quickly. So that's the summation of the Minister's recommendations, but you've seen his letter. You know exactly the wording he used. What might fit for purpose look like for Otago? Well, and this is an overview of what it might look like, but a regional policy statement prepared in the new format, expanded content to cover the things that it now needs to cover, operative prior to the land and water plan being notified. Now, Peter Skelton makes that point very clearly in his report. The reason for it, as I had on the first slide, is vertical integration. The policy statement must be seen to be driving what's going on in the water plan. We can't get them out of kilter. An integrated land and water plan. By integrated, this means we'll deal with all land use issues that impact on water in the same plan, because sometimes the solution is actually the land use, not putting measuring things into water so that we can say that we've got good water quality. Sometimes it's just easier to exclude stock, for example. An air plan and a coast plan. Now, that would be the package of plans that this council should look to have as its fully integrated and fit-for-purpose planning framework. In terms of the content, all those plans will give effect to national direction. And as I said before, that continues to pour out of this government, and we just have to deal with it. It will also give effect to the regional policy statement. So you're starting now to probably pick up a picture that the policy statement is critical. We have to get it right. And finally, all these plans have to be in the national planning standard. Now, that's a format that's been put together by central government, imposed on everybody. It's electronic, and it works, yeah, there or thereabouts. So, but we're stuck with it. So, and this seems like we're working backwards, but now that you know what a fit for purpose framework might look like, what are the key principles of fit for purpose? And I put my hand up and say these are all mine. Let's get that clear. My colleagues next to me here have read this, and I'm sure there'll be others that would be added, and they may change the emphasis on some of these. But a fit for purpose planning framework would have clear direction on the outcomes sought. So the issue is, what are the outcomes you want for this region? And let's get them recorded. It's vertically and horizontally integrated. Vertically is regional and upwards, but horizontally is across the plan itself. If you do one thing over here, it should be consistent with what's going on over somewhere else. It needs to be consistent across the region. It's an equity thing. It's a fairness thing. What applies on the coast should apply inland as well. For example, the regime needs to address what are becoming increasingly complex issues. And because they're becoming increasingly complex, we're getting more direction from central government, and therefore it also needs to be able to respond to the changes in that environment. It needs to focus on the key issues. We simply don't have time to look at all the wish list. We've got to get down to what the real issues are and address them. And I think once as a council you get to that stage, you'll find a lot of the others kind of disappear. And this was the Canterbury experience. Plain language and ease of use for all. These plans need to be approachable by everybody, and they ought to be able to read it and know exactly what was intended. You shouldn't have to go to an explanation to find out what the words mean. The policy should direct resource management outcomes, and I've talked about that before. And all the answers are to be in the plan. So an applicant for consent should be able to pick the plan up and get a fairly clear steer on whether they're going to be successful or not and what conditions might be imposed on them. Now, they become some drafting principles. They become principles for consideration around this table as you develop the policy framework that then gives us the instructions to convert into plans. And we can come back to these. This is, as I say, an overview of what's going on here. That leads us to a work program. Now, the minister has said he would like the revised planning framework basically in place by, i.e. notified, by December 2023. This is the program that will achieve that and achieve engagement with the communities across the region. So, the first thing we have to do is do the water permits plan change. This is the quick fix for the deemed permits. It's to be notified by the 31st of March. We're going to try and pull that forward, because every day we delay, we're creating issues for our community. The omnibus plan change, which is the partner to 6AA, we're hoping to get notified in March 2020, because it solves a number of problems that are alive right now in terms of water quality issues. The regional policy statement review, we intend to notify in November 2020. It's a year away. There's a lot of work to do, but it's exciting work, because we need clear policy direction from you as a council that we can then translate into a plan. So there's good exciting work there. And then the land and water regional plan, which is the reviewed water plan, waste plan, and a few other things clipped in that we know we need to deal with. We're trying to get notified by November 2023. Now that fits in with the minister's desires for all water plans going through a process whereby they're notified in 2023. He has a hearings framework set up in some legislation that's before the House at the moment, and they'll be operative by 2025. So there's the key date for why the deemed permits plan change deals with that five-year period.
Might just be helpful to point out those dates beside those FMUs are when we engage with the community, when we have the conversations about objectives. They're not individual plan changes.
Correct.
We'll do one, move on to the next one, and then they'll all be notified together. So just to to clarify those dates.
Yeah, it's a case of going into the community, working with them, doing the work, and then I'm going to use the word parking it until we get to 2023 and we start to pull it all together. But the reason we have to get in and get all of that finished before April is the regional policy statement hopefully will be operative in April, and we've got between April and probably only September to make sure that it's all consistent. Everything we've done with the communities is consistent with what the operative regional policy statement's saying. So these dates fit together a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. This slide sets out and is an exact copy of the words that are in the paper around the key principles behind the water permits plan change. This is not the content, but the principles that we are applying as we draft. So the focus must remain on the bigger picture, which is the regional policy statement and the land and water plan review. But we recognise how important it is to do this. So this plan change has to be concise and very clearly directed at the issue in hand. Water allocation should be based on water use, not paper allocation. And that's a very common thread across the country at the moment.
Yep.
You know, at least we get back to what people are using rather than what they've been allocated. Consideration of potential impacts on existing water, we've got to look at those, and we will. Consideration of potential impacts on the abstractors, and existing priorities and deemed permits. So what's going on in their business, we need to be conscious of, but we also have some clear direction as to what we've got to do. And these deemed permit consent applications will be processed with part of an eye on what's coming in the future. We can't simply ignore the direction of travel that's already established for us by the government through the national policy statements and the direction of travel that we're likely to head in with the plan review. We're looking for efficiency of time and cost for both council applicants and other parties. And there's a lot of work going on with our colleagues and consents around how they're going to process them and the whole regime around that. And finally, these provide us with an opportunity to start some data gathering. Now, I'm not looking at new data here. This is water metering and making sure that we are getting accurate information regularly fed to us. It's a requirement anyway, but this is an opportunity for the council to up its game in that space, and that data becomes useful for conversations we have with each community when we come to develop the water plan. And it's the dates that I had on the previous slide as to when we go into those communities. So they're the principles that are sitting behind the deemed permits or the water permits plan change.
Okay, just before we go, and I realise there are people bursting at the seams, I want you to bear with me for a minute because now having chaired you at least three times, people tend to take off and then we don't actually go logically through. And they're kind of like a whole lot of side arguments. I wonder if we could deal with this by asking questions, but also, so we're starting actually right up there with the paper on the background. That's on page 2 of the 10 papers. I don't think there's any questions that anyone has there. Have they? On the background to why, how this decision was made. I will just make one comment which you raised. And it's just my observation from experience. There is a reason other than people sort of thinking, oh, maybe the minister hasn't got the votes to take through Peter Skelton's thing of putting this through legislation. People in the House, there are two things that are in short supply. One is money, and the second is time in the House. To take something through the House can sometimes take upwards of all 20 hours. Very rarely does something slip through the House very easily. This would not be an easy thing to slip through the House. He wouldn't get it through under what we call the Statutes Revision Bill. It's too serious to go through under that. It would have to be done as a separate piece of legislation. I don't think he's got the time to do that and would actually hold us up
as we did it. And I think, and I haven't asked him, but that was my looking at it thinking, oh, gee, I can see why you're doing that. Okay, and it's just a comment I want to make. Before people think this is about a party not supporting it, I think it's actually more basic. Okay, any questions to do with the background? Okay. I think I might open it up for questions. Hilary had a hand up first and then Michael. Thank
you. It wasn't about this background. It was about the last slide before the questions. And really what it was, I think, a very simple question. When we talk about water permits, are we talking about only the deemed permits or the water permits which are currently expiring, like in June next year or whatever, that people are just at the moment giving 6 months' notice of their doing things with? So,
the latter.
The latter. So it covers all the
covers
permits.
Covers all permits. Yep.
All water permits.
All water permits.
Yeah. So in the meantime, people have to go ahead with what they have to do because their time, their six-month thing, so that they're just going to box on regardless of the fact that we're about to.
And that, hence that's part of the reason around the 20th, aiming to do it by the 20th, by February rather than March. So the sooner we can get this plan change in place, then all new applications come under the notification in place. all new applications would be assessed under that, is my understanding.
But there will be some, and I'd need to check.
Can you speak up, darling?
There will be some water permits coming in all the time for renewal, but most of them were issued for a 35-year consent, so it'll be people that come in early rather than late. But I anticipate there will be some.
Sorry, not the deemed ones, the general ones that are.
Yeah, they've got a 35-year term, many of them.
Hang on, I've got one, two, three. Michael, is yours on this topic?
Yeah.
It is on this topic. This particular topic about permits, right?
And that's why I want to explore, because this is where the rubber hits the road. First things first, on deemed permits, my understanding is that Professor Skelton, I guess we'll find that out very soon, was quite happy to roll over deemed permits until, and it made logical sense, we were ready to implement the national policy standard on freshwater management. Is that your understanding?
His recommendation to the minister,
yes, that's correct,
was that the minister looked to change the date.
Right. In other words, just to keep it going until we were ready with the wider and bigger picture, and then bring those deemed permits in as part of that picture. Correct.
That's
good. But the minister, for his own reasons, has chosen not to do that, and we are now proceeding to an interim plan change. Now let's just go through this one on the deemed permits. On the deemed permits.
It would be applying to all water pipe permits.
Sorry?
It would be applying to all water permits, not just deemed.
I understand that,
permits.
But it's the deemed permits that drive this, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it.
Well, we have to take consideration of all water permits, though.
I accept that, but it's the deemed permits that are driving this, not all water consents. Now, on the deemed permits, what I want to know is, when we put the plan change out in March of next year, just take me through the process. It's a proposal. We invite submissions from all interested parties. We appoint, presumably, an independent commissioner. They then report back to us. Now, two questions flow from that. How long is that process likely to last for? A year? 6 months?
Good 6 months. Depending on the number of submissions that we get, I would have thought that the recommendation back to this council would be within 6 months.
Okay, so, and you're going to have a lot, I would imagine, you're going to have a lot of submissions on this issue. There'd be a lot of interested parties. Second, what are you going to do in the interim? So I turn up now and I want to have replaced my deemed permit. What are you measuring me against? What consent process will I go through now? Until that plan change is completed. So here's two questions. The first question is if I turn up today. The second question is if I turn up after the plan change has been published, presumably in March of next year. So first of all, take me through the first one. I've applied for a resource consent to replace my deem permit today. What process will I go through, and will that be different than the process that I will go through after the plan is published in March?
Shall we let the consents manager answer that?
Please.
Once the plan is notified in February next year, that would apply to those applications. But if you came in today with your application, it is the regional plan Water Otago as it stands today that applies.
So those are two different standards being applied, aren't they? Well, we don't know what the second standard is because we haven't seen it.
Exactly.
But one presumes that it's going to be different than what we've got now.
Correct.
So I wanted, is that correct?
Yep.
So is there a practical incentive for me, if I'm an irrigator or an irrigation company, to come into the council now and apply for a resource consent under the existing rules and regulations?
Be very careful here because this becomes of commercial interest. And I'm getting a little bit worried.
So all application is assessed on a consent basis. So, I can't really give a full answer to that question, sorry.
All right, I won't ask for an opinion then, all right? But I think it's pretty obvious. Okay, then that leads to the second bit. You've said, and there are a couple of your general assumptions that I would test, but we'll do that in argument later because this is a time for questions. But the moment that the RPS gets published in March of next year...
Notified in November is what we're proposing.
Yes. Yep. What are we intending to do? Are we intending... What are the consent times that we're intending to give? Is it going to be for 5 years, 10 years, or if they're applying for 35, what's it going to be?
Can I just clarify, you're talking about the RPS or
I'm talking about the deemed permit. I'm replacing my deemed permit, so what are you going to give me a resource consent for? What's the time period if I apply for 35 years?
If you apply today?
Yeah.
If you applied today?
Yeah.
So we would need to look at the existing provisions. And each application is taken on its merit. And so it's not a case of saying everyone will get this or that.
Hmm. So the minimum time frame, you can have a shorter consent as possible. So
that is not an answer.
Just hang on, please, Michael.
All the RMA says is you can have a maximum of 35 years. It doesn't guarantee you. And, in fact, most regions don't give more than 10 years.
We've just gone through the Lindis where Judge Jackson's given 35 years.
Yes. But that's a side issue. So what I'm saying is it's very unusual practice these days, irrespective of where His Honour Judge Jackson's got to in the Lindis, for a consent to be issued for 35 years. And the standard practice is 5 or 10 years. Both Joanna and I have
just
come from
please.
A region where a water permit, in fact, I recall one in the last 7 or 8 years that's been longer than 10 years.
Okay.
Canterbury's
I am very conscious at the moment that I have 6 people on the list to speak, Michael, and I really must go through it. They are Kate, Andrew, Gretchen, Brian. Kate?
I think it may assist people to understand why I'm standing back. I do not have a deemed permit. My husband, our farm, does have a water right, which we renewed in 2003, well within the time of renewals, but was only given 15 years, or 16 years or something. And so that's we've got that to come up before 2021. We've got an application in with a whole lot of people at the moment, and as a group, as we've been encouraged to do, and that is pending. If this decision goes through, my understanding is it could affect, because it would be weighed up as a new proposal against the old plan, and that is why I'm conflicted, apparently. Okay. So that's why I won't be doing the debate. I think that gives an idea of how people will be affected. Anita, I'm just concerned with your language. You said most consents are 35 years. You did say that, and then you said many in your answer before. Do we have any data on what resource consents lengths are to the quantum of water? Sorry, you did say most.
The existing ones?
The resource consents, yes, that they are. Because I think that we need some clarity about this, because I think it's one of those figures that really is out there, and I don't know what they are.
Yep.
And for you to
just
say most
on,
is
please, Michael. I can't see
interesting.
You.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just know historically OIC has issued 35-year permits, but I wouldn't know the numbers. We can probably get them.
Is there an answer coming out of the staff?
So I don't have that data to hand, but we do keep records of consent expiry date, the purpose of that permit, and also the volume of water. So that is the type of information that would be presented when we would be giving advice on the content of the proposed plan that would be needed for this. So the data is available, but just not at the moment.
So could we have that data available to us, say, within about 24 hours or by this weekend? Is that at all possible? Thank you.
We can have some data, so the team are working through that at the moment.
Right.
So we can pull what we can based on the consent information, noting that the water volumes and the way it's measured vary considerably consent by consent, so they're just trying to run that so the numbers are accurate. So
okay.
We're dealing with...
Understand. Okay, Kate, have you finished?
It's just the language, and again going back to this deemed and consented, and sorry, permit. I thought water consents were water consents, not water permits. Have I got that wrong in the RMA?
Yep.
And so they're all permits, they're deemed or they're consented.
Every permission you get under the RMA is a resource consent.
Yes.
But water permits and discharge permits are labelled slightly differently. So land use gets resource consents or subdivision consents. It's still a resource consent, but a water permit to abstract is a water permit, and a permit to discharge is a discharge permit.
Yeah.
And it's just a language thing that's in the RMA.
Okay. And the only thing is that I think a lot of people are getting confused with water permits being deemed when this really relates to water permits and water consents.
Yes.
So is it on the permit and consent?
Yeah, more clarity on the information that is about to be provided.
I was pretty sure that we were seeking the number of resource consent / permits and their expiry dates, their time frame. I think that was the point we're trying to ascertain is how many are at a certain at 35 years, 25 years.
We can certainly have that for you within 24 hours.
Yep.
Andrew?
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Okay, my question's focused on the interim rules and the decision-making that will be required around this table to notify those interim rules. So have the staff and consultants thought about how we develop simple, cost-effective, big-picture, focused, etc., interim rules that will be accepted by the stakeholders, affected parties, applicants? So I'm just trying to think, if we want to meet this February deadline, we need a governance arm that is satisfied that these interim rules are fit for purpose. So have you thought about how that is going to be developed?
So we've definitely thought about how. I don't think it's fair to say we haven't got the full answer yet. What we're proposing in the paper is a number of things in terms of process. Given the timeframes, we're proposing that we have an online process for input into what the plan change could look like before Christmas, right? We're proposing that the council has a workshop the first week back that we're here in January to workshop the plans where we would put forward, I guess, based on, and this is why we're keen to hear about the principles today, based on principles, we'll go away and draft some things up and bring back to the council for input into that. Then we will, from there, we'll go through the standard process of consultation that you would go under any other plan change with RMA.
It's from March.
No, from February.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, January, actually.
It's
That's
January.
Why we're going 7th January for a council workshop.
16th of January.
So we've had those dates in the paper. In terms of how, yes, we will, approach will have to be slightly different. We have to be much more agile. So, yes, we have got things, workshops and things, internal staff workshops, things starting to be booked in now to think about and to bring in external people to think about what that plan change may look like so that we feel like we have putting forward something robust in January to you guys at the workshop.
Thank you. I have a question for Joe as well with regards to processing any water permits that are, including deemed permits, that are submitted in the interim, i.e. today, tomorrow, whenever. The process would have to give effect to an NPS and an NES in their current form. Would that be correct?
Yes, yeah. So if something comes in today, it's processed under the plans and higher order documents as they stand today. Yep.
Okay, thank you. So, sure.
Next person was Gretchen.
I think I'm okay, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, Brian?
Yeah, I'm just looking at Minister Parker's letter in relation to the rollover, potential rollover of deemed permits, and there was a discussion in terms of, you know, is it advantageous for farmers to rock up now? When I was just looking at Minister Parker's letter, and in it he says, in my view, long-term terms for these new consents would be unwise as they would lock in unsustainable water use and inhibiting the council from effectively implementing the outcomes of its intended new RPS and new water plan. And then he goes on to say that any new consents could, for example, be for a maximum of 5 years. So regardless of the detail, you know, in terms of rolling over these deemed permits to consents, it's going to be short term. So in terms of farmers thinking that there would be an advantage in terms of transferring their deemed permit under the current set, or what is the weighting of, does this apply from now?
No. So an application arrives today at the counter to replace a deemed permit with a water permit. The classification of that activity, permitted, controlled, discretionary, non-complying or prohibited, well, if it's prohibited, it won't be there, applies as of today, and that carries on right through its processing, no matter what happens in the plan change that we start talking about, start work on.
But under that plan, we also have the ability to have a short-term consent.
Yes.
And that is consistent with the Minister's direction.
But the plan provisions, as they are at the moment, are what will guide the processing of it.
Yep.
The moment this is publicly notified, it will have to be given effect to as well. So it will become part of the package. But there's been nothing ever, since 1991 anyway, to stop a council issuing a 1 or a 2 year permit. The maximum you can issue is 35 years.
Yeah,
that's the only requirement in the legislation.
Thank you.
Michael?
Yes, I want to drill down, though, onto this, because the key is in the detail here, not in the policy. And it's the detail that stuffed us up brilliantly over the last 10 years. So let's go through this on the detail. If I come in and apply for a resource consent today to replace my deemed permit, what I'm asking and what we need also to get from Marion in the next 24 hours is what are we likely to be granting per catchment? So in other words, what consents have we been granting over, say, the last 3 to 6 months for resource consents, replacing deemed permits? How long have we been giving? So I'm interested in that question as well.
Okay, well, really what your question is it leads you to making policy on the fly.
I'm not asking.
And that isn't necessarily what you would want to do. So what you have to do is to consider on its merits each application. And each application will be different for a variety of reasons. There will be, for example, differences in the way the water is taken, the amount of water that is used, the efficiency of use, and there are all of the, and also the habitat of the catchment, the flow at the point at which the water is taken and further down the catchment, and cumulative impacts. And so when you look at all of that, that's what you use to help you weigh up what the term of a consent should be. So that's why we can't say today that we would recommend anything set in concrete. It would be incorrect of us to give you a number, because we have to look at those things on their merits.
That's not the question I asked, and this isn't a policy discussion or debate, so I think you've misinterpreted the question. So I'm asking for Governor, and I'm actually demanding, so when in actual fact those figures come that have been asked for and will be provided, I want to know what, over the last 6 months and the consents that we've been regarding, how long those have been consents have been for the replacement of deemed permits. It's a simple factual statement. It's nothing to do with making policy on the fly.
Well, that's fine. Can I just wait for the information then?
Yeah, that's all I asked for.
So can I just check that I've heard that correctly? You're asking for, in the last 6 months,
those people who have deemed permits, who have applied for water permits, how long did those permits last
That's
for?
That's all I asked. Okay.
Can I just one clarification? Yep. Just deemed permits or
just,
all
water? No, just deemed permits. Just deemed permits. Yeah.
Okay. It's Hilary had a question, then Kate.
When you're talking about having workshops and things about how to create the proposed water permits plan, change, whatever, where in that is talking to the people about this efficiency of time and cost for both council applicants and other parties? Or to put it another way, most urgently, I would have thought, if anybody's talking about short-term and they're all in people's heads out there, 5 years is short-term. You know, it's too short, and it is indeed intended to be too short to invest in anything. So if people have to now do something short-term, and then in the short term they're supposed to do it again, and it might well be another short term because, quite frankly, this whole environment's not going to probably have settled, I would have thought that we as a governance arm need to know that there's good information, and I would guess provided by a combination of applicants and the people, often as a professional person helping create applications, some good information about how much it actually costs and what time it takes for them to do this, considering they're going to have to do it again soon, not the cost of putting in the application, the actual cost that they have to do, and also what whether if they're going to keep on doing these rollover things, they have to keep engaging with Iwi Fishing Game. Who was it all? There's four of them, isn't there? Each of them,
parties.
Of which costs time and money. Can they do that sort of? Can that process be streamlined or something? I mean, I'd like something to come back to us saying this is what each time somebody engages with this process, it's likely to cost. This is the places we can see that we could reduce that cost without reducing the properness of the process. I mean, I don't see where we're engaging with that at all, and that's a really important thing for the applicants. And it's no good waiting until February, March to look at that, not just the proposed plan, but the cost of engaging with it.
So, again, we're putting these up as principles today that we would consider in drafting the plan change. There are ideas floating around as how we might be able to address that efficiency of time and cost, but we haven't landed on anything, and we would be proposing to bring back to that 7th of January workshop with Council options for plan changes that would take that into consideration. We're also talking to external consultants, and external parties are involved in the process now to get an understanding of how we might do that.
I'd like to see something that actually gives us some fairly robust information about what comes back from those people about not what the plan has in it, but the cost of engaging with the new plan and things.
So what I'm trying to get at is that we're hoping to design the plan change to minimise the actual efficiency, get efficiency of time and cost to applicants and other parties in the process.
We won't know whether you've done that unless we get some feedback, some fairly robust feedback from planning people and things that gives us some confidence that when you propose something to us, effect it's having on people. I mean, I'm saying like tomorrow morning would be not soon enough quite to actually start almost talking to planners about where you would go with that.
I'm happy to provide at that 7th, whatever the January workshop that we have is, happy to provide you with the information of who we've talked to in the process of coming up with the options. Is that what you're after?
No, I want how much they as a group or on the average or something think it might cost to do this and any ways that they think could be used to.
So can I just one more attempt? We have a current cost. We could talk about current cost, or we can talk about the cost we're trying to achieve with this specific water plan permit change.
I'm not talking about the application cost.
So you guys
have no idea how much it costs an applicant, I gather, because I've asked and I gather you don't.
So I've worked for applicants. I've obtained water permits in Central Otago,
so you do have some idea.
But we're also planning an online. So this is not an ideal process. It's anywhere near an ideal time frame. And at this stage, the best option we can come up with is a 2-week online consultation process where we can direct questions. So we can ask that question as part of that, and that feedback is what we're going to use to come to the January workshop. It's not ideal, but we're really squeezed for time. But we can absolutely target some questions or direct feedback in terms of what governance is looking for, and that's the feedback that we would bring back in January.
And that's
so perhaps, can I help you with going back to principles?
No.
We have to focus on the bigger picture, which is the water plan review and developing that planning framework. And I think all of us, not just this council and the staff in this council and you as governors, but all of our stakeholders are also under enormous pressure with the amount of work that we have to do. It's my hope that the conversations we can have are fairly pragmatic, where we say, let's not spend a whole lot of time worrying about how are we going to engage on the detail too much around the next 5 years. And let's put our energy into the bigger picture and the framework. And that's what I will be asking our stakeholders to consider.
I think the Minister has clearly told us to do that.
There's a little bit of ill discipline coming in. No, Michael, not at the moment. I understand about the big picture, but this is the first time this council has actually started to grapple with something. And some of us around this table are inexperienced. There are a whole lot of people who are experienced. There are some who are inexperienced with the rules of the law. So there will be some itty-bitty questions. We've got half an hour until we're going to break for morning tea. I am conscious that Gary hasn't had a chance, and I would like to ask some questions. Gary, and then Gary, me, you, Kate. Sorry, Kevin.
Look, in erring on some caution around my conflicts, my question to you would be, the Minister has said, the Skelton report said preferred option is to just extend the date by 5 years. This issue has, the Minister has said no, hand it back to Regional Council. Why would the Council then not just replicate what Skelton recommended and just extend the date by 5 years?
Absolutely.
If you are looking for the most seamless plan change, why wouldn't you just recommend that rather than what is recommended under your current report, which will tie up the affected parties in further debate and discussion and issue?
Can I suggest that question be asked of Skelton when he comes in? Because Skelton, more than anybody in this room, actually understands what the Minister is talking and thinking about and will give us a fair answer. Probably more informed, sorry people, than the people sitting in this room.
Oh, sorry, with respect, Madam Chair, our consultant has chosen to take a position following the Skelton report.
That's correct.
So our consultant now is advising the Council on which direction to go, and I would prefer the answer to come from our consultant as opposed to Professor Skelton. Professor Skelton's job is done and complete.
No, it's not, but never mind.
I can answer that in a fairly simple way. The Resource Management Act says they expire on the 1st of October 2021. That's it. End of story. They expire by law. We can't just roll it over because we can't break the law to do that.
Well, that's ridiculous.
So that's why the permits go. And it's been in the law since 1991.
With respect, another question then. A community accepts that, but that wasn't what the Skelton report recommended. So he recommended more time to get in place the additional framework.
And the Minister
that
said
could
no.
Then,
yeah.
by law.
And yes. The minister said no.
Well, the minister said pass it back to the council to do
no,
rather than
the minister
Parliament.
Said, I will not change the law, which is required to happen. This is law. This is not council policy. This is law at central government. If you're saying, if the minister says, I'm not changing the law, get on with it and actually meet the 1991 deadline, then that's what we have to do.
And that's fully accepted.
With respect, can I just add something here? I just wanted to read the sentence which has been burning at me from the minister to us, and it says, I would encourage you to consider a narrow plan change that provides for the relatively low cost and fast issuing of new consents on a short-term basis as an interim measure until sustainable allocation rules are in place. Now that clearly, what the minister was saying, and that just to follow up Gary's question to you, was that Skelton was saying, listen, I suggest a plan change, and he's saying for exactly the good reasons...
Suggest a law change.
Exactly. And Marion's, and for reasons that Marion's explained already, we don't have time to do that. You go back and do it yourself.
Yeah, but it's not rolling over.
There it is, a narrow plan change that provides for relatively low cost. It doesn't say you can't just simply roll it over and do it, bring it the practical effect to the Skelton recommendation. It was a process he was suggesting that we should take over, not a policy.
Would you like to respond?
I will.
The answer is the same as the last one.
Yeah. What we've tried to do by giving you the principles is to give you a level of comfort around our thinking about what would be included in the plan change. And we've been extremely specific around keeping our focus on the bigger picture, allocation being based on water use, not paper, consideration of potential impacts on water, existing water extractors, efficiency of time and cost. But nevertheless, we still have to do a plan change. And in terms of the bigger picture, without causing a great deal of consternation between parties, there may be opportunity to do something in the plan change that takes us some small way to the future. And that is why we're saying, for example, water allocation should be based on water use and not paper allocation. Because we all know that, and irrigators have told us, that even though I think, if I track my memory back, I think our records show something like 16,000 cubic metres are used a day in the Manuhitakia. Irrigators have told us that's actually 8, but we know the paper allocation is something like 32.
It is 32.
And so what we're saying is, well, there's some opportunity here to kind of correct that. And why wouldn't you take it, do it now, rather than continue to have those arguments moving forward about paper versus use? That's all we're saying. So we're not saying we want to do anything controversial. We're just saying that there is opportunity if we broaden the thinking to the wider fix on the framework for us to make some small incremental shifts through this plan change that we have to do anyway. So it's not anything other than looking at those opportunities. But we are also, in doing that, mindful that we don't want to buy years' worth of process and appeal and argument, because it actually helps nobody and puts the emphasis and energy in the wrong place. That's all we're talking about.
Can I just check with the people who seem to be most upset? Michael, am I getting the feeling that you think there's no necessity for doing a plan change?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, both the Skelton report and the minister's letter make clear, Marion, that you just need to do something to get us to 2025. By that time, you will have done the NPSFM, and by that time, everything else will flow from that across your entire region. So just, I don't have time to deal with this in the House. I don't want to. You should have sorted this out a long time ago. You sort it out. And so what we're looking for is a plan change that essentially imposes a moratorium, if you like, on doing anything further than what we're doing at the moment on the status quo until we've got all these in PSFM. Now, I might add,
That is the policy of this council that we, in actual fact, enacted last year. We want the NPSFM to drive us in all the decisions we make, science-based regime.
I was asking you a question.
So there's the answer. That's the answer.
Well, I'm not actually, sorry, I'm not still not clear, because we can't do a law change because we don't manage the law change.
That's right.
So we have to, however, do something by 21, because otherwise all the permit holders become illegal.
I guess what I'm saying to you, Marion, is any plan change that we impose will provide a solution.
Okay, so you are agreeing to a plan change. It is just what's in the plan change.
Correct, that's exactly right.
Okay, Gary, am I got you right? Is that what you're saying too?
That is correct, but then what Sarah has just explained adds all of the concern that has been out in the community all along. So she is saying that right down to 3.2, for the one example of the Manuhirikia, is where council is directing to. So the plan is based around actual use, and it's written in the plan about actual use. And if you're going to go into those levels of at this proposed plan change, then that is where the community won't just, they will fight the plan change. So it is not going to happen seamlessly. It is going to happen.
Okay, so can I just check that again, that I'm on the right track? So you're arguing as in 14 A or C. No, 14A. No, it's up there. No, it's 13B. Water allocation should be based on water use, not paper allocation. Are you disagreeing with that?
I disagree.
No. That was a yes or no. Do you disagree with that?
That and many other parts of
okay,
what is proposed.
Okay, right,
yes.
I've got that clear. Kate?
Well, for clarity, the detail of 13B
and what it means is in 14. And
yes,
that is what I'm finding particularly difficult to understand, because that is a considerable change from current. So that is the maximum allocation permitted should be based on the average,
yep,
not on the actual. Now, considering the last 2 years have been exceedingly wet years for many of us, and I don't understand whether that's weekly, annually, so daily, weekly, monthly or annual averages, it's not clear. So I don't understand that principle.
Right. Now we're actually into some of the nitty-gritty of the argument. Can somebody answer that for us?
Well, I can only answer it by saying that we're not there. We're not there yet. This is where we're heading to.
It's a principle, not a formula.
Yeah.
No, you'd better explain more than that, because it's fairly major.
Yeah, so we're putting forward a principle that... the principle here is that we use actual water use, not paper.
Yep,
that's the principle we'll be reporting.
And when you say preceding irrigation seasons, how many seasons?
Haven't worked out.
Because, I mean, when
that's
I read this last night, all I could think of was the weather,
and
surely would have to be more than two.
So,
it would have to be a
so we
considerable time.
That we haven't determined that yet. We're going to be looking at a number of factors to decide on that, and one includes data, one includes seasons, and we haven't actually come up with a... That's what I mean when I say we haven't come up with a formula yet.
Kevin, is your hand up?
Yes.
People, I don't see Gary sometimes, peripheral vision.
Yeah, that's
you can
right.
Do
I, I've got a few questions, but look, I just would like to make one comment on the bigger picture. The bigger picture is actually our communities. So whatever decisions we make now, we must ensure that we are considering our communities. And I have real concern about the process of trying to push this through to suit some minister, to suit some professor that's come down from Canterbury, that we have to have this, well, wherever he came, he worked or he can, that doesn't matter. So that has come down to here and now imposing things on our communities, and again, exceptionally busy part of the year, to have done by January. So I want to flag that, because I think I have got an answer for a whole lot of it. A couple of the questions are, You made a comment of over allocation of water takes of our resource. So is that, and with all due respect, is that an assumption, or is there actually scientific fact that we have on that?
We've got some science around that already.
So is that will that science be refuted by the stakeholders at the moment? How good is that science? That's my real issue, is how good is that science?
Well, I'll ask the question the other way, and I don't want to sound flippant, but how good's their science?
Because
that's what it comes down to, is a straight debate between communities of interest,
yeah, correct.
If you like. We believe in our science. We believe our scientists.
Good. So what I'm saying there, can I be, if I undertake a time with you to look at your science, I can be confident that the science is there.
So we give, as policy people, we rely on experts for information. And the test that I always ask for our experts is, are you happy to defend that in the Environment Court?
Yeah.
Because I'm not a scientist, and so that's the test we impose on them. And we say, you get yourself, we're not saying you have to be right or wrong, but we're saying, are you in a position where you're comfortable enough about what you're presenting that you can stand up and defend it in the Environment Court? And if you're happy with that test, then we as policy people, will rely on that science.
Yeah. Yeah. So there does appear quite vociferously out a group that we are not using currently, that are making assumptions or making scientific facts or scientific assumptions that our science is not right. So, and we don't seem to be engaging with those people. So I just wonder at what stage before we do all this do we actually bring...
Is a report from NIWA in the papers?
I'm not saying from NIWA, I'm saying from local consultants within Otago, the Otago people that will argue against our science. So it would seem very, very good for us to actually engage with them and compare sciences to see if we've got common ground. And is that about to happen?
Well, I think we are already engaging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
The second part of the question would be, if we go back to, and again I'm thinking of my community, if we go back to...
The people of Oamaru or the farmers?
I'm thinking of Otago. Which I have to do. Give me a tick for the correct answer there. who is going to bank, and I don't mean as bankers, but who is going to bank a five-year consent?
I'll give the answer that I gave to the farmers and the Manuhirikia, which is that we have work coming up in the National Water and Land, whatever it is, NWLA, or ARD, that is June 2023. If I were a banker and knew that you had issues around water quality and that you had to meet, as well as water allocation, I wouldn't be lending you any money until that was resolved.
Correct.
This is all part of a package. It's not just dealing at it piecemeal.
So that's
why there's a five-year limit.
Yeah. So thirdly, then, is it possible for us to go ahead under our current plans and issue consents to either deemed permit holders or people that are looking to renew consents to give them a consent that will allow them to continue, allow them the privilege of continuing to extract water, subject to conditions, that condition will be that we review their consent once we know, and it is confirmed, the National Policy Statement on Fresh Water, once we have completed our Regional Policy Statement, and once we have set our Otago Water Plan.
And defer that to the consents guys, is that right?
Can I answer that so I don't put Joe in an awkward spot? Most consents have a review clause, so you can issue a consent and then review it. You can't review it with the view to reducing the amount of water because that's unlawful because it frustrates the consent.
Right.
So you would have to. You can only review it around uncertainty of conditions, and reducing the amount of water is not a lawful reason to review a consent.
Michael?
So that's really important point. Because there's a lot of confusion over this, so can we just clarify this now? Any consent that you grant, let's just say there's climate change, something spectacular happens, we're in a drought for 5 years or whatever, and we need to pull those consents back in for water allocations that we've actually currently provided to say, this is what's happening, we need to pull this back. We can pull the review in then, yes or no?
You can't change the volume that consent has sitting on it.
So, in other words, it doesn't matter what happens.
That's right.
No matter what national policy statements may happen in the future either.
Yep.
if we've said you can take 10 widgets of water for that month or that year, you're entitled to take 10 widgets of water, even if 10 widgets of water is not flowing past you.
Correct.
That's
correct.
Irresponsible.
Yeah.
Well,
there's two people getting excited over there.
Sorry, just a small point of clarification. What we could review is any residual minimum flow, which would affect the timing of the take, but it wouldn't affect the overall volume that people were allowed to take. So you could still take your 10 widgets. But
just couldn't take it in January, February, March.
Yeah, it would just affect the time you could take it, depending on the level.
Right, so we can change that minimum flow. So just let's say we impose minimum flows on the Manuhirakea, for example, take it right up to something like, you know...
Go on.
Whatever.
Stop stirring.
You say you do that, then you can pull all those consents in and go, here's the new condition.
Yes, you can. There's provision to do that under the Act, but the review clauses, and I won't go into it, there are some risks associated with that for council and the applicant that we would need to be aware of at the time of doing it.
Okay, that's important to clarify. Thank
Kate,
you.
And then Kevin Cated, been waiting for ages.
Just a point there. I'd asked a question. Just a point of I'd asked a question. I was going through my question. Council laws was allowed to jump in, and now we're going to another one. So I just want that noted, and I will I'll pass. But
Kate,
just,
would you want to?
It's quite critical.
I'll defer to.
No,
Kate's deferring to
Kate,
you, Kevin. Go on,
yeah.
Kevin.
No, one of the biggest things about this, so you're saying that one of the biggest things we were told in the reports is that we didn't have a failure to underpin with our allocation limit setting, failing to underpin them with the appropriate hydrological monitoring and freshwater science. Right, that's one of the things we've had. So if we go to the extent and do what I'm suggesting, that go out and allocate, go back and issue our permits subject to the MPS, subject to our plans and subject to the water plan, we have got the mechanism there that if we then put in the water allocation, yes, we can't stop the volume, but we can stop through minimum flows and... Can't we? That's what I'm saying. Why put all this pressure on everyone? Why not go ahead and issue stuff with the proviso that will be reviewed when these figures come down, so people can actually carry on with their life?
I think the simple answer to that is that any such condition would be ultra vires because of its uncertainty. You wouldn't know when or what would trigger the change, so the consent condition is actually meaningless. Consent conditions have to be enforceable, they have to be certain, and it has to be for a resource management purpose. None of those tests would be passed by a condition that said, oh, by the way, if A happened or if B happened or if C happened, we would call in your consent and we might do something with it. The other point I was going to make is Canterbury did this once and it cost them millions. It's not a good path to put yourself down. You don't want to be reviewing consents like that if you can avoid it. You want to get the planning framework right so when you issue them, they're in line with the outcomes you're trying to achieve. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Last question before break, Kate.
I'm going to put two in one then. I had expected that there would be an options paper here that would look at... potential ways of meeting the requirements, and one would may have been just rolling over the deemed permits to RMA consents with the actual allowance, actual use, sorry, on there, and just understanding why that, as an incentive, and Michael talked about incentivising, we want people to come on board as easily as possible to get to that point. Why is that option not given here?
Because that's preempting a decision that this council has to make as to what it's going to do with the minister's recommendations.
Well,
and I wasn't prepared to go there, okay. And I don't think...
No.
So that's what the purpose... The recommendation paper is asking us to give us permission to go ahead and do a plan change.
Yep.
I think that's why we've provided the principles, because once you give us the direction on the principles,
we can go
then we can understand how we might make a plan change fit together.
But then why is 14 in there on principle 13? I can understand principle in 13, I cannot understand 14, because that is exactly what will get people upset. And the fact that it's actually in the report, it should have been an option under 13, not being one of the terms of 13.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that stage, and let's break, and then when we come back in at, I've forgotten the time, when we come back in at 10:30, we'll welcome you, Professor Skilton. Thank you very much.
I just said it. I'll change content out.